Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. This week, we're going to be joined by our old mate, Nov Kashyap, again, and we're picking up our series around the stages of practice growth. You'll recall that in episode number one, we spoke about how to start a practice really well. And the purpose of that was, of course, to explain that if you start really well, you can progress through those stages of growth rather quickly. But if you get it wrong, then it makes it going through those stages rather difficult. So if you're in that phase of starting up, I'd really encourage you to go back and listen to that episode. Nov particularly covers a whole lot of really good stuff around getting the location right, getting the marketing right. So that's really, really key. We then moved on in episode number two, where we spoke about moving through those stages of growth up until the point where you've got good patient flow, you're at that success level, and you're stable. And we spoke a lot about getting your HR right, taking a systematic approach to HR. We spoke a lot about cash flow and managing budgets and getting your systems and processes in place. And again, we got a lot of really good content there for you guys, and Nov shared some absolute gems of wisdom. We also shared some of the things that each of us, with the benefit of hindsight, might do differently, some of the mistakes we've made along the way. And I certainly know in my case has been, you know, lots of mistakes, lots of trial and error. So we've shared some of that with you in that episode as well. But this week, we're going to be talking a lot about case acceptance, and we're going to be poking it and prodding it from a couple of different perspectives. We're going to, of course, understand why it's so important, not just from the point of view of the practice and generating revenue, but why it's important for patients. We're going to be going through some of the specifics and the mechanics of how to, you know, set yourself up to present treatment in such a way that it is more likely to be accepted. We're talking about it not just from the point of view of the dentist who's presenting treatment, but really from the point of view of a practice owner as well, and how to identify where there's some challenges, how to identify what the gaps might be, and how to address that. So we're going to be going through a lot of those sorts of things. And again, we share some of the things that have worked well with us, but equally we share some of the things that, you know, we've learnt the hard way along the way. So hopefully that will shortcut your learning journey a bit as well. And without any further ado, here's the episode. I hope you enjoyed, and we'll talk soon. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. This week we are once again joined by Dr. Nov Kashyap. Nov, how are you going, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks, Jesse. Great to be back, and looking forward to the third part of this series.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. And of course, we're going to be covering through a lot of material around case acceptance. But I thought it's probably just worth spending a moment or two reflecting on the journey thus far in terms of the stages of practice growth. We started in our very first conversation about discussing how to start right. And you went through a whole lot of really cool material around location and marketing and all that sort of stuff. And then last week or the week before, we went through the second step, which was about moving up to stability and success and getting all the things in place, such as, you know, getting a budget in place, how to forecast accurately, creating some daily goals, effective systems around the appointment book and so on. We went into a bit of HR stuff around, you know, getting a systematic approach to HR and some material around team meetings and all that sort of stuff. So, mate, we might build on all that stuff today, and really, you know, this is where the rubber's going to hit the road. We're going to be speaking about case acceptance. Mate, from your perspective, obviously in your practices, where does case acceptance fit into the mix in terms of your day-to-day operations of all your practices? What role does it play there for you guys?
Look, Jesse, I think that question is kind of best answered looking at the evolution of my practices over the years.
Yeah.
So if you look at my main practice, we've taken that from, you know, a turnover when I first bought it of about the $400,000 mark to, you know, well into the well over 2 million now. I think last year was about 2.5. This year we're on track for about 3. And the big thing that's differentiated that turnover, other than obviously more patients, has been the acceptance of more complex work. So yeah, I'm looking at that purely on a per chair turnover rate. So you know, where case acceptance was low, the amount of turnover we were looking at per chair was a lot lower. And looking at now getting my dentists trained from the likes of yourself and others in case acceptance, the communication skills around case acceptance has meant that, you know, we start to see larger treatment plans. Larger treatment plans are obviously more profitable, fixed pros, but also when we've got quadrant dentistry happening and many fillings at one appointment, all those kind of things lead to efficiencies that translate into greater profit to the bottom line. So I think, yeah, case acceptance obviously plays a massive role in that. We could have a week that might be quiet in terms of the number of patients we see, but if we put through some pretty big cases that, you know, might take just a full day of a dentist schedule, then we're starting to see turnover that, you know, is a bit more profitable. So what I'm saying is, if you're doing $8,000 worth of fixed pros on one patient versus doing $8,000 over two chairs, two different dentists on, you know, 15 patients each dentist, the profitability of the $8,000 is much greater than the profitability of the other thing. You know, you've got increased staff costs, you've got perhaps
steri costs.
Yeah, steri costs, material costs, the time that your receptionist is there processing each of those appointments, the efficiencies and the changeover times, you know, things that you don't have when you've just got the one chair running with one dentist seeing a patient for a full day and that's turning over that much. So, you know, a dentist that's not doing fixed pros would only be turning over $4,000 to $5,000 in a day. You know, that equivalent dentist that could be doing fixed pros would be doing a lot more. So, yeah, that's just an example. And I'm using fixed pros as just an example because it's probably one that most private dentists will relate to.
Yeah.
But, you know, case acceptance plays a massive role in that. So, you know, if that case wasn't to be accepted, that $8,000 worth of treatment could end up being, you know, let's say five or six big fillings that are $250 a pop.
Yep.
And you can see the massive revenue difference between the patient receiving the ideal treatment, which is obviously great for the patient, but also it's a win-win-win. You know, you're delivering quality treatment that you can be proud of. The patient's getting a much, much better solution to their problem. And the revenue to the practice is really good as well. So, yeah, that's I think that's a win-win-win. But I guess with case acceptance, Jesse, you know, we've gotten a lot of training from the likes of yourself, but what do you think are the main sort of concepts behind case acceptance for people that perhaps haven't experienced any communication training in regards to that? What should young dentists or practice owners be focusing on with regards to case acceptance, and what sort of framework should they be introducing to their conversations with patients?
Look, mate, that's a really cool question, and I'll absolutely dive into that. But I just want to actually, before I do, I just want to highlight something that you mentioned in your intro there, because it was just absolutely a really solid point that I think that the audience will have taken away. But if you haven't, I just want to reiterate this point that not all revenue is created equally. The point Nov just made there was the scenario where you've got, you know, perhaps eight patients coming in for, you know, $1,000 each versus one patient in for $8,000, and the cost associated with providing that treatment is much less than, you know, the eight lots of individual patients coming through the door. So one of the things I love about case acceptance is it allows me to have what I call A-grade revenue coming in all the time. So I love it for that. The other things I like about case acceptance and being able to do that really well, of course, is it's, you know, clearly good for the bottom line. And in fact, it represents one of the three key ways to, you know, improve revenue within the practice, which we'll touch on in a second. And of course, it improves the satisfaction of the practitioner. But in terms of the things for young dentists to understand, I think there's a couple of concepts that I would just like to start with. And the first one is just to understand that people make their decisions emotionally. Every single one of us, we're emotional human beings. We all make our decisions emotionally, and we use logic to justify them. So at the heart of good case acceptance is really understanding clearly what it is your patient's wanting at an emotional level. Never ever in 20 odd years of dentistry have I had a patient walk in and say, "Hey doc, I really want to, I'm here for my six veneers, a crown and an MOD, hit me with it, that's what I really want." Yeah, and because what it is they want those procedures. Even when someone comes in asking for a procedure, what they see is that procedure will give them an outcome.
Yeah, so I want to be able to smile confidently, for example.
Yeah, completely. Or I want to look good for my daughter's wedding, or you know, whatever it happens to be. So those are the emotional things that drive things. A couple of other things that I would say in terms of conceptually is that one of the things I think that's difficult for young dentists particularly is when you're starting out in practice, you know, you've spent so many years training to be a great healthcare provider. And clearly, I think that's essential to have success in practice. But it's sometimes a little bit hard for the younger dentist to walk the line between providing great care and making sure the commercial elements stack up as well. And sometimes it's easy to fall off that line to either tip into wanting to be seen to be so nice and everything, but not actually presenting the treatment because they're a bit afraid of it. And then the corollary, of course, is you're going a little bit hard on the case acceptance where it might come across as a bit full on and a bit forceful. So I kind of lovingly call that the loser or doofus alternative. The loser alternative is when you want to be so nice that you just don't present anything and everyone's your pal. But the doofus alternative is, you know, when you just push too hard and you just don't have that skill set to be able to present treatment elegantly. And I think that's really the key thing to understand is it's about elegant case acceptance, not just case acceptance in itself. So what we want to go through with you guys today is a couple of things that have helped both Nova and I in that journey. So I guess first concept is about being elegant, being cool with it. Second concept is about, you know, understanding that people buy emotionally. And the third concept is that people buy to solve a problem. And if there's no problem, there's no sale. And equally, just to take that a bit further, even if there's no awareness of a problem, there's no sale.
Yeah, I was just going to touch on that point. So often it's I guess, a bit easier when the patient comes in asking for a specific result. For example, you know, I want to be able to smile well for my daughter's wedding, the example that you just used, Jesse. But it's a lot more different when they've got a crack that they can't see on a lower molar that has not given them any symptoms, but you know, there's a large amalgam on there and there's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yep.
And there's a couple of teeth like that in their mouth. So, you know, in terms of a new patient examination, a new patient that comes in, and I know the new patient exam is something that certainly takes a lot of developing to get a protocol in place, to get a method in place, I guess, and especially for the younger dentists.
Yep.
But when you're a practice owner, I guess, with employee dentists, as well as a practice owner that now has bills to pay that needs to have a certain degree of case acceptance,
yeah.
Can you run me through what you think are the main ideals of a new patient exam and how a new patient exam broadly looks in your practice?
Yeah, sure. So understand a couple of things. The new patient exam serves a few different purposes. The first thing that it serves is clearly it allows us to get an understanding of what's going on at a clinical level. The second thing it allows us to do is to present our treatment philosophy to the patient in such a way that they know where we're coming from and we can see that they're a good fit or otherwise. But typically they should be a good fit if they've, you know, come through the right marketing channels. The third thing it allows us to do really is to build a relationship with the patient. So remembering that people will buy from those that they know, like, and trust. So it allows us to develop all of those things with the ultimate goal of presenting treatment to the patient that's obviously A, in their interests, but B, is most likely to be accepted. So, you know, to be really direct about it, our new patient examination is part of a sales process. And I know a lot of dentists have a problem with the word sales, and I get that. But for the sake of expediency and being clear about things, that it is what it is. And so the new patient exam certainly is at the heart of that. So the way we start with our new patient exam actually starts long before the patient even comes into the practice. So certainly the patient might have found out about us and they've rung the practice to make an appointment. But then we are on the front foot in terms of making sure that we've got a new patient welcome pack ready that explains a bit about our practice, who we are, and explains, you know, the details of the appointment, what we're going to go through. We position our new patient exam differently from others. So we go out of our way to make sure we position it as unique and valuable. And in our practice, you know, we have in the past experimented with the whole concept of a fixed fee for the new patient examination as well, because I just got sick of people, you know, wanting to know about, you know, how much there was an extra bite wing or an extra PA going to cost. So we've experimented with that. So patient comes through the door and ultimately I will meet them and greet them. We try and make sure that we're really bang on time for our new patient examination. So we have some time set aside each day in the appointment book for new patients. And typically that's either first thing in the morning or after lunch, because I know that I'm guaranteed to be on time at that point. They come into the surgery and we have a conversation. And the conversation that we have, we call a fireside chat. And it's really a bit of a us getting to know them getting to know us conversation, and we go through a whole lot of things. And I think one of the other concepts, Nova, that I didn't touch on earlier, which I should share, is that a treatment plan is designed to take someone from where they are now to where they want to go. And so for me, the new patient exam is getting absolute clarity about the starting point, where they are now, and equally absolute clarity about where they want to go. So the framework around that, mate, the way we do that is we have a conversation. We have this conversation. I ask questions and I want to find out a few things. I want to find out a bit about the perception of where they are now in terms of their oral health. And I usually ask them to do a bit of a self-assessment on a scale of 1 to 10. How do you think you're traveling? Oh, I'm a 6. Yeah, doc. Okay, great. Well, tell me why you're a 6. And, they'll give me, their reasons, that things are going well or things that are not. And we explore those in a bit of detail. And I'm wanting to constantly explore beyond the surface answer they give me. So I typically will ask, can you tell me a bit more about that? Or what's been the impact of that? Or, walk me through that. How's that been for you? So I'm really trying to get a bit of an understanding of that. I'm trying to get a bit of an understanding of their past dental experiences. Are they phobic? All sorts of things, mate.
Sure. No, that's good, Jesse. I think the big things that I got out of that, there's a couple of things there, but you've got a very structured way that a new patient exam is done that I guess with experience can translate to fairly good results. Someone who's starting a protocol for a new patient exam, one thing that I've noticed in my own practices is that it does seem a little foreign at the beginning.
Yeah.
It does seem a little bit, orchestrated, and some dentists may not be comfortable with that, but it starts to get quite natural as you start to use it more and more. And that's what we've sort of found. An important thing for us that I think is really important for practice owners, especially to keep in mind, is that you spend all, and you touched on this again in regards to marketing and marketing through the appropriate channels, but you can have some excellent external marketing. You can get patients in the door, but the problem is if each patient that comes in the door that needs, let's say $3,000 worth of work, if they're not being converted to that $3,000 worth of work and only being converted to $1,000 worth of work, that's a return on investment on your marketing that's going to suffer. And I think that's a massive thing that, this is the junction where clinical dentistry meets the business side of dentistry. And I think it's quite an important junction that we need to be aware of. I have a lot of friends that are dental practice owners. Most of my friend group has similar philosophies in terms of hiring graduates and developing those graduates to become great dentists within a few short years. But one of the big things that we're acutely aware of is if we don't provide our dentists with great communication training, then all those new patients that we're getting, and even the existing patients that the graduates or the newer associates are seeing, is money left on the table in a sense. The money that could go to pay our bills, money that could go towards our profits.
Yep.
And so it's really important that, practice owners that have an associate don't just take an isolated view of their own case acceptance and their own patients, but also look at the patients that are coming into the practice and do reports such, that look at the conversion of treatment plans and the acceptance of treatment plans, and not just, the acceptance of treatment plans, which can be tracked quite easily on your practice management software, but actually how many complex units of work are being offered by dentists. So, I think especially when the dentist is new, it's really important to look at that quite closely, touch base with the dentist. And one thing that I found, and this has happened to a couple of my associates over the years, is one bad outcome for a particular procedure makes them gun shy with ever doing that procedure again. or for a number of years it takes to recover. I had an associate that had a couple of, and he's one of our better associates, one of our more senior ones now, but we hired him as a graduate. And he had a couple of really bad outcomes with fixed pros and just didn't do any fixed price. You know, when I say didn't do any, I literally mean that
none.
Did none for, you know, a period of 12 months or so.
Oh,
until
wow.
And now, you know, he's done a lot. Now it just took a little while to get back to have the confidence. And I think it's really important for owners to be acutely aware of that, to understand that, you know, if there are gaps in knowledge or gaps in confidence, that that's addressed really quickly so as not to cause issues. Now, this particular dentist had some really niche procedures that they're very good with that they focused on. So from a revenue or turnover point of view, you know, it wasn't the end of the world. And they were getting referrals internally from my dentists for those procedures. So that was good.
But in terms of being a well-rounded clinician who's confident, that would have set him back, well, 12 months, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. That's exactly the point. And, you know, and the greater point is again, you know, just going back to the revenue that's been left on the table. And if you look at the revenue from the business sense, but from the clinical sense, your patients are not getting the ideal treatment they should be getting either. So,
yeah.
You know, you're not doing your patient a service. So
I think that's a really good point though, Nave, because sometimes when people talk about case acceptance, some people feel like it's all about the practice winning or the dentist winning. But in actual fact, the patient winning is, you know, right in the mix there. You know, it's that, as you say, win-win-win, what works well for the patient, what works well for the practice and for the dentist as well. So it's really important that when you're thinking about case acceptance, it's you're thinking, you know, if this patient was my mum, you know, what would I want for my mum? And, you know, that's the golden test that we have at our practice, what would we do for our mother? And I think that's really key.
Yeah, and I think that leads into another point as well, Jesse, and, you know, hiring the number of associates I have over the years and talking to other dentists and their associates, it's really important also to look at the other extreme where you've got a dentist that's a great salesman but is quite unethical. So, you know, it's really important to be quite acutely aware of you know, you've got a guy that comes in and your practice normally does 8 units of crown and bridge every week, and all of a sudden this one guy alone is doing 15 units a week. You've got to start to think, well, you know, is some of this treatment needed, or is he just using skills of case acceptance in an unethical manner? And I think that's equally as important as an owner to have a good grasp of that.
I absolutely couldn't agree more. And you know, all the things that we speak about, you know, really must be coupled with a strong moral compass and doing the right thing by the patient all times. And you know, certainly as a business owner, we're on the lookout for that all the time. And one of the things that, you know, you spoke about or you touched on there, I'd just like to highlight a fact as well, is if you are a practice owner, one of the things Nave and I were talking about just before we came on air was neither of us want to be the smartest person in the room necessarily. And the reason for that is, you know, as a practice owner, I'm always wanting other people to grow further and reach higher than I can. And, you know, as a practice owner, I always feel that my role is to, rather than to be the only person who can provide good outcomes for patients, is to be the person who builds teams who provide great outcomes for patients. And it's a subtle but important shift. And I think if you're really going to scale a practice, and I know, Nave, you've scaled lots of practices, that's a really key distinction. I'd be interested in your thoughts around that.
Yeah, look, it's something that I've thought about a lot. You know, there's a whole different line of thought to what you and I think as well, which I think needs mentioning. But for myself, we've got clinicians that are really good in children's dentistry. You know, they do GA, or she does GA, and, you know, we've got a number of dentists that will do pulpotomies, pulpectomies, stainless steel crowns, space maintenance to a really high level. And our marketing around kids is tailored to making sure those dentists feel like they're getting the type of work they need.
Yep.
And equally, my dentists that don't like doing that have the confidence of knowing that they can refer that on. But exactly as you said, it's about developing different clinical abilities that overall as a practice aid in keeping revenue in-house, firstly, but also giving the convenience to the patients to not be referred out to 10 different places to get treatment done at a very high level. So, and The thing that I hear that disappoints me of practice owners, you know, I hear of practice owners that will own multiple practices. They'll scale their practices and they'll put newer dentists into each of those practices mm-hmm. and reserve the more complex work for themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, they will come in 1 or 2 days a week to each practice and do all the implants, do all the crown and bridge, do all the difficult crown and bridge, and their associate at those practices are just basically glorified hygienists. You know, they'll do scale and cleans, checkups, and we'll basically just do
occlusal fillings.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think that's.
And how long do they stay?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You'll have high turnover of associates. You'll have
high turnover of patients too. With that
of patients, and you're going to have a case where you don't actually have a business. You've got what you've really got is just yourself that's just working. You know, you've basically got a highly paid job. And, you know, I've always taken a different approach to that. The only clinical area where I'm the most proficient in my practices is wisdom teeth surgery. And even with wisdom teeth surgery, you know, I'm proud of telling my friends that own practices and that you know, I've got one associate that can do wisdom teeth to about 60-70% of the ability that I can, and I'm hoping after 18 months to 2 years she can do everything that I can do. And this is a person that was a graduate 2 years ago.
Yeah, great.
And we've got another associate that also does wisdom teeth, and he's, you know, pretty good with them, but he doesn't really want to grow. You know, he's happy with where he's at and his ability at. But from my perspective, you know, I look at other owners who want to monopolize the wisdom teeth and will only and not give any sort of guidance to any of their associates. And the problem is, I think that's a very short-sighted view. You know, you may have a life event, you may have, you know, something occur that basically means that you can't work or you don't want to work for an extended period of time. And if you haven't allowed your clinicians to get upskilled in certain areas so that they can replace that clinical ability or easily, you know, incorporate it when you want to take that extended break, then that's going to be that's just poor business.
Yeah,
you know, there's
yeah.
no real way to think about it. Even though we're talking about a clinical aspect, it's really just good business practice as well.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And if you ever want to grow a business, we're talking about true business ownership versus owner operators here. And I think that's a really key distinction, is most dental practices fall into the realm of owner operators. But the ones who really excel are the ones who, you know, get the true business ownership. And, you know, what you're talking about, Nov, is essentially clipping the ticket of everything that goes through your practice. And, and you know, that's smart. That's what savvy business is all about. And, you know, it's much better to have, I think, a small percentage of a really big pie than to own the entirety of a small pie. So I take the similar view to you. I wanted to talk a little bit, just coming back to the techniques around case acceptance for a second, because I want to get some specifics here for the guys to take away. I think we've kind of both made the case really strongly why it's a good thing to do and how to do it elegantly and ethically. But one of the mistakes that I see dentists make all the time when it comes to case acceptance is they present the treatment plan too quickly. And for me, it's akin to meeting a girl and on the first date asking her if she wants to get married and have 16 kids with you. It's really repulsive. And so one of the things that I see is that sometimes people say, you know, Mr. Jones, it's nice to meet you and I'm going to have a look at your teeth today. And, you know, within half an hour, I've just diagnosed 15 grand's worth of treatment. And so I think that's a mistake. The second thing that I think that dentists do, you know, could do better is understanding where the patient is in their decision-making process. Because if they're not aware that they have a problem, we need to help them become aware. And that's going to come through our clinical process and how we use language around that. Equally, it's going to come down to how well we use photographs and other bits and pieces to, you know, highlight these things. And a third problem that I see is not taking the systematic approach to case acceptance, which I know we just touched on. So for me, taking a systematic approach is not so much the use of script, it's about having a framework. And what the framework allows me to do is, once I've got the framework clear in my head, it allows me to freestyle a little bit. And so it means that if I'm using language that feels right for me, rather than scripting that so that all my associates then have to start walking and talking and sounding like Jesse Green, or in your case, Nav Cash App, if you've given them the framework, they can overlay their own personality onto that. And that's why I love frameworks as opposed to scripts, because, you know, as soon as you have a script, you know, the patient doesn't know there's a script, and the verbal ping pong goes off course really quickly because no one, you know, but you're not meant to say that, Mr. Patient. You're meant to respond with this, you know.
This, yeah.
So I think that's a couple of key things. And one of the things that, you know, I just wanted to also highlight is that, yeah, once you've gone through this process of having a fireside chat and you actually look inside the patient's mouth, you know, one of the jobs for us, of course, is to see what we need to see clinically, but it's also really important to be able to communicate that. And we need to be able to communicate that really eloquently and elegantly so that the patients do know, you know, if there's an issue, that they are aware of it. No matter, you know, as Nav indicated earlier, you can see lots of lower molars with cracks everywhere that, you know, are a bit of a time bomb. But because they're asymptomatic at the moment, the patient's blissfully unaware until all hell breaks loose. So we need a way of doing that. And one of the ways that we do that in our practice is cameras and photos and all that sort of stuff. And equally, having language and building urgency and you know, not talking about a tiny little crack, but saying, you know, it's a crack. You know, Mr. Jones, what I'm seeing here is there's a crack running down the, you know, front and back of your tooth and out to the side. You know, I'll take a photo and I'll show you what's going on. And then ultimately, you know, being able to talk about that crack, the implications of that crack, because, you know, we've also got to talk about the implications and fan those flames of implications, because, you know, sometimes a crack might just mean a chip in the JUCO to the patient. If we don't explain the fact that the tooth could break, it could lead to an endo, it could lead to something, then we're not really doing the best job for the patient and informing them so that they can make an informed choice about the way forward. So, Nav, do you have anything you want to add in around that?
Yeah, I think the thing that I do want to add is how this ties in. You know, you've talked a lot about the communication techniques around getting the case acceptance, and that includes photography and that kind of thing. But I think it's really important for practice owners to try to develop the clinical ability of your entire team.
Yeah.
Because that ties into exactly what you said. And I know I'm repeating myself a little bit, but as you develop their clinical ability, so, you know, I'm not saying that they have to go overseas and do an implant course where they place 20 implants, but just an introduction to implants and the principles around implants means that the patients ultimately in your practice are getting offered all the options properly. And this doesn't just have implications on best practice in terms of the best outcomes for patients, but there are medico-legal implications to your practice and to your, you know, to your associates that, you know, go far beyond just, you know, like, oh, they weren't offered an implant, or they were offered a bridge and that kind of thing. But I think it's really important, just, you know, I'll just touch on this point, that you have a broad understanding of the realm of clinical dentistry as it is now. You know, it's a lot different to what used to be in 10, 15 years ago. You know, implants are much more mainstream now. Bridges have been left by the wayside a little bit. On the same token, you know, there's a lot more adult orthodontics happening these days. There's things like Botox and aesthetic treatments. Sleep apnea is a major advancement not an advancement. It's something that we've just become much more aware of. And, you know, the dental impact and how we can help our patients in terms of their overall life quality by diagnosing that kind of thing. It's just really important, I think, that by giving your clinicians that training clinically and allowing them to go on courses and allowing them to increase their reach, then your patients are being offered the best possible solutions for, you know, whatever issues that they have.
Yeah, and that really ties into something that I talk about as well, Nav, which I know, you know, we've spoken about as well, is the three ways to increase revenue. And the three ways to increase revenue really come down to, you know, when you boil it down to very simplistic terms, the three ways to increase revenue are to see more patients, which obviously comes down to marketing, making sure your appointments books are systemized and structured properly. The second thing that it comes down to is seeing those patients more frequently, more regularly, and that comes down to making sure your recall system's tight and all the appointment booking systems are working well. But the third way is to increase the average dollar spend per patient. And that really comes down to A, case acceptance, and B, the range or scope of services that Nav has already spoken about, and making sure that you can keep as much of that work in-house. So if you're thinking about, you know, I want want to increase the revenue of my practice by, you know, 20% this year. If you focus on those three areas, you know, increasing the number of patients you see, increasing the frequency with which you see them, and then ultimately the increasing the average dollar spend, I can guarantee you that small hinges swing big doors, and that small changes in each of those areas will lead to a big uptick in your revenue. So there's some really good reasons to do this. But now I've got a question for you, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, but here we go. Sorry, mate. So in your hands, and then I'll happily share what I do as well. You've had a conversation with a patient, you know, they've come into the surgery, you're having a chat, you're getting an understanding of their current situation, you're asking about their chief complaint, their past experience and dental history, and you know, you've shared a few things around your philosophy and other bits and pieces. It's all part of the fireside chat. You've then asked them a little bit about where they want to go in terms of their goals, you know, whatever that may be. You've done your examination clinically, you've taken the records you need to take. What is the process that you go through to present a case to a patient? Do you have anything that you do particularly? And I'll share what I do particularly.
I don't see a lot of new patients, Jesse, to be completely honest with you. Most of my patients are going to be from other dentists with wisdom teeth. I do see recalls of my own existing patients. Yep. But look, I guess when I was seeing new patients, my knowledge and training with around case acceptance and communication was probably a lot less than what it is, what my associates nowadays have. But my focus was built on a relationship with the patient. Yeah. So a lot of the way that I kind of approach case acceptance, and this was a product of the fact that, you know, my communication techniques probably weren't there, was to come across as a very genuine person who is concerned about their oral health, who is concerned about more than just their oral health and, you know, their entire family, for example, you know, if they've got a partner that they've brought in or if they've got children they've brought in, but building a solid relationship with them that way that then allows me to present the treatment without putting pressure on myself. So I know that this person has built up a certain amount of rapport with me and has a lot of trust in me. So I'll present the case the way that, you know, I was doing, which was basically just showing them what I could show them from intraoral photographs, from explaining to them an x-ray and just giving them a very basic understanding of the x-ray, so that, you know, sometimes they were even able to just diagnose holes themselves, that, you know, they'd look at it and I'd explain, you know, how caries looks and they'd go, oh, wow, I've got a big hole right there. And, you know, when you've gotten that type of realization from them, or when you show them intraoral photograph and they can see the large crack running through it or the side of the filling missing, then they start to establish some problems themselves.
Yeah.
And when you can get them to diagnose, well, you know, this was my philosophy, but when I could get them to diagnose a couple of things themselves, then that allowed me to, I guess, get free rein over the rest of the things that weren't more obvious. So if I can show them something that's very obvious to them, then I've built the trust and they can understand, well, look, I really do have these problems, even though I weren't aware of them, it's quite obvious to see. And so, you know, it's not just those two fillings that need doing or those two crowns that might need doing. There's a whole heap of other work that also needs doing. And then when the patients can understand that the treatment is needed, then it's just up to them to sort out their budget and be able to, we basically work out a plan moving forward that allows them to get the treatment done in a time frame that's acceptable clinically, but also while we work in with their budget. And yeah, that's how I always approached it.
I think that's really gold, mate. You've come across or covered a few really key areas that I just want to highlight. And yeah, even though you don't see new patients so much these days, mate, I can guarantee that if you took that approach and were seeing new patients, you'd absolutely do brilliantly well. The first thing you spoke about, and I have really, really eloquently, was the need and desire to build a relationship with your patient. And I would just reiterate that over and over and over again if I could, because that is, I think, the biggest key of them all. And that comes down to taking an interest in your patients, understanding who they are, what it is they want, asking lots of questions, listening intently, reflecting that back to them through, you know, what we call listening to confirm. And a few things around that. There's a great saying that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think, you know, that really shines through with what you're talking about there, Nov, with, you know, building a relationship and building that trust is critical. The second thing you touched on there was how much easier it is if your patients can discover at the same time as you what they need done. And that is the simplest and easiest and most effective thing that you can do if you set it up well, as I'm sure you did, by explaining this is what care is, looks like, here's the films, you know, tell me what you see here, and so on and so forth. So that process of co-discovery is really, really critical. And if anyone hasn't come across that in the past, you know, I think it's really important. There's some verbal skills that you can use around that as well for co-discovery. The sample verbal skill that I use, you know, let's just use perio probing as a simple example, is, you know, Mrs. Jones, this is my perio probe. You'll see it's got millimeter markings all over it. I'm just going to measure the depth of gum tissue around the tooth here. We know that from the literature that if that probing depth is 3 millimeters or less, we're pretty happy with that. Things are pretty healthy. But as soon as it goes above 3, we start to get a bit concerned. And the further above 3 mils it is, then obviously the more concerned we are. So you start probing, you know, 1/8, you know, and I call that the deepest pocket depth. You know, 1/8, 2 mils, 1/7, 3 mils, 1/6, 2 mils, 1/5, 5 mils. And of course, their ears immediately prick up. And I know that technique's been around forever and a day, but it's still extraordinarily effective. And if you couple it with your visual method of that nerve, it's really powerful. So sure. That's nice, excellent. Mate. That's cool. I love what you're doing there.
Yeah. So have you got anything more to add to that, Jesse, in terms of, you know, I guess specific ways that you take them through the treatment plan that you've got?
Yeah. So look, assuming that I've had the conversation, that I've had the fireside chat, we've got some clarity around all those things that we spoke about, you know, as I said earlier, the chief complaint, the dental history, our philosophy of care, their perception of their current dental health, their goals, and a whole lot of other stuff. What I do is I also pre-frame a few things. And the first thing I pre-frame is the possibility of needing a second consultation. And I essentially say, look, you know, Mr. Jones, we're going to be having a look at everything here today. And, you know, hopefully everything's going to be straightforward. And I'll be able to give you a treatment plan at the end of today's appointment. However, on the off chance that things are a bit more complicated or require a bit more thought, what I'd love to do is take some extra time and make sure we give you the right plan first go. And in which case, I'll just ask you to pop back in a few days' time for a cup of tea, if that's okay. Not sure if we'll need to do that or not, but just in case. So that's the first thing I'm setting up. And the second thing I set up for in that conversation is I'll say, you know, Mrs. Jones, it's really important to me that you have a great experience with us here today. And at the end of the appointment, I'm just going to check in to see how your visit was with us. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I'll touch on that one for a moment. But what I'm trying to do is at the end of the appointment, I'm going to ask for some feedback. And if it's been great, hopefully that's good. And I'm going to then segue into asking for a referral. But if the feedback's not great, obviously, then yeah, that's a lesson for us. But the reason I set up for a separate consultation and pre-framed that at the beginning is because as I'm looking around the mouth, I'm asking myself a few key questions. The first thing is, have I built enough of a relationship with this patient that they're likely to accept a treatment plan from me at the moment? The second question I'm asking is, can I actually put a treatment plan together in my own head? So I saw a new patient the other day. He had, you know, periapical lesions going everywhere. He had broken down dentition. He was missing a whole stack of teeth. He had lack of posterior support, closed bite. There's no way known that I could come up with a treatment plan in that amount of time. And I genuinely needed time to think about it. So those are the two questions I ask myself. And if the answer to either of them is no, then I tend to go for a second consultation. Now, I know that this is a little bit contrary to what other people teach out there, but there's a method in the madness here. And I'm just going to cite this great study. Now, if I think you've heard me talk about it before, but it's called the Zero Moment of Truth study by Google.
Yep, Google, yep.
Yeah. So the essence of this study is that people take about 7 hours and 11 touch points to make major purchasing decisions. So what I'm trying to do is slow down my sales process, slow down my case presentation process so that I can get as close to that target as possible. Now, I don't take 7 hours, but I do try and get in multiple touch points as well so they get to know us, like us, and trust us a bit more before I present. And if I'm in that situation, if it's a simple treatment plan, yeah, and I can see it on the day and we've built enough of a relationship, then I'll use the, you know, a series of alternate choices. So A-B choice after A-B choice where, you know, we could either replace it or not. And, you know, they choose to replace it. Well, you could have a fixed option or a removable option. Well, I'd like a fixed option. Well, you know, of the fixed options, you can have a bridge or an implant. So I kind of go down that path. And that's, again, a very simple technique. But when it comes to something a little more complicated, what I do is I use a particular language skill where I'm relating what it is that they want on an emotional level to the procedure I'm looking to do. So for instance, you know, so that you can look good for your daughter's wedding, Mrs. Jones, I'm going to suggest we put, you know, 4 anterior veneers on those yellow teeth or something like that. And that's how I do that. So that's a little bit long and waffly, but that's essentially how I do it. It can be a bit more involved than that, but that's the duck's guts of it.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think there's some good insight there, especially the fact that at the start of the appointment, you're already thinking about how you're going to end the appointment, which is, you know, segueing into a referral. We talked a lot about marketing and growing practices in previous episodes, but one thing that we didn't, I guess, focus as much on was the word of mouth referrals and the fact that they don't cost anything. You know, the return on investment is infinite, you know,
yeah.
There's a zero cost to it. So, you know, that's really good to be able to, I guess, pre-frame exactly as you said, the end of the appointment, which, you know, leads to if they've had a good experience, then it makes it much easier to ask for a referral. You know, I know a lot of dentists and certainly my own dentists have struggled with that previously in asking for referrals. But I guess the pre-framing that you've just talked about will make that a lot easier. And, you know, certainly your help has helped them to be able to do that. So, you know, this stuff works, folks. It's really important that you listen to this episode, take some great notes. Jesse's come out with a lot of stuff that is going to be valuable for your practices going forward.
Cool. Oh, thanks, mate. That's really kind. So, Nav, we've covered a bit of territory tonight. We've gone through, you know, why case acceptance is so important, not just for the individual dentist, but equally for the patient, but for the practice as well. So we spoke about the triple win there. We spoke about the fact that people buy to solve a problem and they, if there's no problem, they don't buy, or if there's no awareness of the problem, they don't buy. We also spoke about the fact that people make their decisions emotionally and justify them with logic. We've spoken about, you know, the things around graduates and expanding their scope of services and, you know, looking for confidence gaps and making sure if there's a confidence gap, we plug that. We've gone through some techniques around how to present treatment. Is there anything we've missed, mate?
Look, I think we've covered off pretty well on case acceptance. Yeah, no, it's good.
Cool. Well, ladies and gents, we might wrap it up at that tonight. I hope you've enjoyed the episode. And if you have enjoyed the episode, can I ask you a favour? I'd really love it if you could either head across to iTunes and leave us a review. We like that. We have higher than average need for feedback. And equally, if you feel inclined, drop us a comment on my website, drjessegreen.com, where you'll see the comments there. Feel free to leave us a comment. We'd love to continue the conversation. And as always, if there's anything that you need or have ideas that you want us to talk about, send us a line. We're happy to oblige. So until next week, have a good one. And Nav, again, thanks so much for coming in and sharing so generously, mate. I love the fact that you walk your talk so much. It's gold. So thanks, mate. It's really good to be able to draw on your experience.
No, thanks a lot, Jesse. And thanks for everything that you've shared with myself and the rest of the listeners as well.
Cool. All right, mate. We'll catch up next time.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.